Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dads on the Fly podcast. I'm Caleb Simmons.
And I'm Joshua Simmons. We are two brothers who love fly fishing, our families, and are men of faith. But like most of you listening, we're still not experts on any of those subjects.
So our hope is to speak with as many people that we believe are experts on these subjects and pose the questions that most of us are asking.
So thanks for joining us along the journey as we seek to inspire and encourage dads and anglers as we wade through fishing, fatherhood, and faith on the fly.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 102 of the Dads on the Fly podcast. We are really excited for today's conversation, but before we dive into that, Joshua, how's it going, man?
It's been going great, buddy. We are wide open here, I think, at both Simmons households, getting ready for back to school. Many of you that are listening, a lot of our dads out there have probably, a lot of places have already started back to school. Some of you are already in back to school mode. We hope that means maybe getting a little groove of listening to some dads on the fly on the way to school, man, like on your little drop-off session.
It's a good time to do it. Yeah, you kind of get back to some normalcy, into some routine, and I think that, yeah, it's a great time to get some more podcasts in your life. You know, let's talk about back to school very briefly, because we got a great conversation we want to get into here in just a minute. But how are you feeling about it? You get excited? Your kids ready? How's it going for you?
Yeah, I think we're all excited at our Simmons household. We're pumped up, have a middle schooler and a third grader, so everybody's excited to go. We've got,
and you're out of classroom this year,
all
man.
Of our school supplies, all of our school supplies shopped, done, bought, and all that stuff. And yeah, I think I'm going to be moving into a new role, so I'm excited about that. And we'll talk more about that maybe at a later date, but okay. Definitely excited to what the school year brings. And you do kind of get back in that groove of things, communicating with some people and just seeing people on a regular basis when you work in the school system. And I know our kids are excited. It's a great time for everybody to kind of get back in their grooves. And, you know, we're just pumped to be everything that we can do right here. Also excited about some things we got coming up with Dads on the Fly. Got a couple of events we can't release details on yet, but that we're going to be at kind of coming up in the fall. Got the Albee trip booked out. We have one spot left, folks, for April 2024. Dads on the Fly retreat right here at beautiful Lake Logan. One spot remaining, only one. So if you want that one, you need to get up with us pretty quickly. Or, you know, at least send us a message and we can hold it for you for a week or so. I think, man, we are, I'm really pumped about our episode today. What else got going on? We haven't been fishing.
Yeah, no, Sally and I were talking about this the other day, not the not fishing part, but just as we kind of head back into school and, you know, it's a bummer in some ways because we've had a great summer. We've had a lot of fun. We've done a lot of great things as a family. We try to be real intentional a lot during the summer and, you know, we stayed up later. We did some different things with the kids and had a lot of fun with them. But I am kind of excited about a little bit more routine and excited to be able to kind of get back into a normal swing of things. Just, you know, personally, professionally, with the kids, with the family, I think they do thrive better on routines. And so yeah, excited about all that. But yeah, man, we're doing good. Just you're right. We haven't had enough time to get on the water lately. We've just had a lot going on with our families.
We jinxed ourselves. We talked about how it was like our fishiest summer ever, and it was for like a month and a half. And then it just like
probably the last few weeks, it's just really slowed down. Well, we've just had a lot going on. Been a lot of different things taking place. And, you know, and as we kind of swing into the fall, it's one of the busiest times of year, obviously, for you as a teacher. It's also really busy in ministry world as we kind of go with that same school calendar as well as we try to minister to families here in our community. So, but yeah, man. So hopefully we'll get on the water soon. It definitely needs to happen for sure.
One last thing before we introduce our guest. If we're giving everybody one last chance, we're going to put this out on social here in just a minute. Midnight tonight, August the 14th, will be your last chance to enter the Dads on the Fly big 100 episode giveaway. The only way you can enter that is if you go back and listen to episode 100, you know, put it on time and a half, two times. So let's do it quickly if you haven't already. Get that secret code that's in that episode and join the giveaway to win some awesome prizes from our friends at Turtlebox Audio, Catch Cam Nets, Anadromous Fly Tying Tools,
Trout Routes,
and more that we haven't even mentioned. So there's a lot that's going to be given away there. So make sure you go listen to episode 100. Also, a big shout out to our buddy Dave Stewart at the Wet Fly Swing for joining us for episode 101. Got a lot of great feedback from that one. And excited about today's episode, man. Today's episode, I met our guest, Mr. Nick Hall, really just through Instagram, social media, talking back and forth. I see he's doing all this carp fishing in urban Colorado. Then next thing I know, he's got a baby girl on his back doing some of this carp fishing. And so Nick was gracious enough to spend some time with us. Caleb, tell everybody just a little bit about Nick.
Yeah, man, Nick's a really great guy. He's a Marine veteran. He's a dad. He's an avid fly fisher. He's stationed out of Denver, Colorado. He's gotten involved with a lot of nonprofits out there in Denver, working with Trout Unlimited and Trout in the Classroom. And he's also got a really big focus on getting minorities into fly fishing and getting them recognized and letting minorities see people like themselves in the fly fishing community so that they can get connected to this wonderful sport. So this conversation is so much fun that we had with Nick. We really appreciate Nick for spending some time with us. We learned a lot about some carp fishing, which was very interesting.
That was the cool. That was kind of really cool to me. We went so many different places on this conversation, from, as you were just saying, from Nick getting minorities into fly fishing, but also he spent a good time in talking about targeting carp, which I was excited about just to hear for the first time. We had not had that on the show, but he's also just a great father, and so it was a perfect blend for our show, and I just really want to thank Nick for joining us. I think everybody's really going to enjoy this conversation.
Yeah, so thanks, Nick, for hanging out with us. We hope you enjoy this conversation with Nick Hall. We'll dive into that in just a minute after a quick word from some of our sponsors. Dads on the Fly is brought to you by Trout Routes. Joshua, I love the Trout Routes app, and it has become an amazing tool that helps us to find more trout to catch whenever we go on any of our adventures together.
Just exploring new water is what makes Trout Routes great, and these guys are always making the app better. Something is added every day, a new feature. They've just added the Street View feature, which you've got to check out. Click on the orange dot, hit Street View, you can see what the trout stream looks like there. So I can't tell you enough about how cool Trout Routes is when you're out looking for new water.
And that's a game changer for us, Josh. We'll be able to see these locations where you want to try to access these rivers. I mean, it's going to be great. So I'm stoked to continue to use the Trout Routes app. We encourage everybody, go wherever you get your apps, download the Trout Routes app. They will be the best tool to help you find more trout to catch.
One thing we've done recently is so much smallie fishing. And so much smallie fishing means we're on our raft. And when you hook into that big smallie, man, you want to get that sucker in a net. And we have chosen, and we are so happy to be have Dads on the Fly brought to you by Catchcam Nets.
Yeah, Joshua, Catchcam Nets are amazing. The cool thing that I love about Catchcam Nets is they allow you to design and build your own net. So for whatever type of fishing you're doing, to customize it with certain logos or different, you know, they got rulers on the net handles, all these amazing things that just make your fishing experience better. So we encourage everybody, if you're looking and if you're in the market for a net, check them out at catchcamnets.com.
And the best thing about it is if you are a small water fisher, if you are a big water fisher, whatever fish you're chasing, they have a net for you. So please reach out to Bo and Steven over at Catchcam Nets, and they will build your custom net today.
Well, we're really excited tonight to welcome Mr. Nick Hall to the Dads on the Fly podcast. Nick, thanks so much for hanging out with us, man.
Hey, I appreciate you guys. I'm looking forward to this all week.
Yeah, man, we've been stoked. Joshua is, I think you and Joshua have been communicating a lot via Instagram, and you found us on there, and we found you and what you're doing there in Denver, and we're going to talk to you a little bit about how you got out to Denver, but we're stoked to have you on this conversation with us, and excited to get into all things carp fishing, which I'm still really stoked to hear about, because I know that's your big thing. But yeah, man, so tell us a little bit first, Nick. Tell us about how you got involved in fly fishing.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy. As a kid, I grew up, you know, spin fishing for catfish and stripers in Maryland, and I grew up in Baltimore, and you know, we did it as a kid a bunch. I remember like memories of me sitting on a cooler because I was tired. The cooler was full of catfish and I didn't know. And there was a styrofoam 7-Eleven cooler exploded. You know, my dad's laughing at me. I'm getting poked by the catfish. And it's just kind of memories that stuck with me. And then, you know, as I got older, got busy, I just stopped fishing. And, you know, randomly I'd go down to the Keys to fish with one of my buddies and troll for mahi and fish for yellowtail. And I had moved to Colorado in 2020. I was living in Germany after working over there for a number of years. And my best friend from West Virginia, he grew up, his family had a little private stream in West Virginia. He was all about fly fishing. You know, dad ran a trout hatchery. And he's like, hey, man, when are you moving into your house? I'm like, oh, like August 27th. He's like, all right, I'll be there September 1st. We're going fly fishing. I'm like, huh? So I was like, all right. He's like, just book us a trip. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So I hit up this fly shop out in Colorado called Native Fly Shop. And I'm like, hey, I want to go fly fishing. They're like, okay, do you want, you know, stream or still water? I'm like, I don't know. Like, whatever. He's like, well, it's a holiday weekend, you know, let's just do still water because it won't be booked. So we went out to this spot, this private lake out in Colorado. And man, I had a blast. First fish I landed was like 23-inch rainbow. Obviously, it was stock, but I was like, oh, this is great. I'm having a blast catching fish all day. Go home and and use this military discount website that I have to buy all my like Reddington stuff at like 40% off, because it was, I was like, it's so expensive to get in the sport. Bought everything and I didn't catch a fish for 6 months. Like, getting out in the water, I like, had no idea what I was doing. Mending the line, like setting the indicator, you know, the depth, the tippet length, and you know, split shot. I didn't know what I was doing. So it was a trial by error, and you know, went on Amazon Prime Video and started looking at Rosenbauer's, you know, Orvis Guide to Fly Fishing, to, you know, kind of iterate through each process in fly fishing to really understand what to do. And that's where it just kind of grew from there, and started to get better at trout fishing. Met a guy here in Colorado, and he's like, hey, I don't have time. I've got a kid. I can't get out to the trout streams that take an hour and a half to drive to. You want to go carping? I'm like, yeah, all I have is a 5-weight. He's like, no, I'll just use my 6 or 7. And we went out, and that was a year, a little bit over a year ago, started carp fishing. And I think in a year, I've probably carp fished over 130 days.
Oh, wow.
So I'm a full on addict, and I can drive 5 minutes away from the house and you know, sneak out for an hour, catch a couple fish and get back home and keep the wife and baby happy. So,
all right, before we get into the carp fishing, I've got to go back to something you said. You talked about cat fishing. Caleb and I have some early childhood experiences on catfishing as well. We used to do a lot in a lake where we grew up, not far from us, maybe about 45 minutes away. And I don't know how you guys, but we would do the old, just, you know, you drop 6 rods off of a big pontoon boat where we were catfishing, and whichever one made that little zing, you know, and it was all conventional. And I just remember, this is one thing we did. When the catfish was landed on the boat, you know, we were going to keep them and eat them. So we kind of put them out of their misery pretty quick. And I remember this guy, we went one time, he had a T-ball bat. And and once you got him on the bottom of that boat, you just a little smack with the T-ball bat, and it was in the cooler and on to the next fish, you know. So I don't know if that might have saved you from them busting out your styrofoam cooler there. Yeah.
Oh, it was like we would It's kind of funny because I think about it, like ethical fishing now. We never dispatch the fish right away. We would always keep them on ice and water to keep them fresh, but you probably should just dispatch them and bleed them there, right? Like, yeah, you learn that as you go.
That's what we did.
You don't think about it as a kid. But yeah, my dad used to take me to this place out in Maryland called Cox Point State Park, and we just fish from the bank. So we throw, you know, corn, night crawlers, chicken livers,
whatever you can get,
you know, put a little bell. You know, back to have all those cool, fancy rods with the Lawrence, just a little bell. And you sit there, and him and his buddy would be drinking Jack Daniels, and I'm sipping on a Sprite, waiting for that ding to go off.
That's awesome. That's how you get into it, man. What a great way. Like, that's kind of just once you get into fishing, and then you get that first kind of tug on a fly rod, everything kind of changed for us as it did for you.
Oh, for sure.
So, so you kind of brought it up. So let's kind of go there. You live in Denver. So you're in what you would call, I mean, a city for sure, metropolitan area. For sure. And you have found a buddy who has found these carp in urban areas. So talk to us, first of all, a little bit about where you're fishing.
Yeah, so I met my buddy Nate through my wife here, like just randomly. And he's a Denver native, and he's been fly fishing the South Platte, the Denver South Platte, his whole life. And we'd fish for trout a couple of times, and you know, he'd mentioned that we should go carp fishing because he's got a kid and I had a kid on the way. We'd have more time to fish if we can go fish closer to home. So I was all on board. You know, the first day he took me out, I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I couldn't see the fish. I left my polarized glasses at home. So carp fishing is all sight fishing. You couldn't see the fish. I didn't know how they move. I didn't know how they ate. I was thinking of, oh, all the stuff Tom Rosenbauer taught me about fishing for trout and getting good drifts. And that does not apply to carp fishing at all. Like, I say carping on the fly is more, you can liken it more to hunting, right? You're trying to spot the game, right? Spot the movement of the game, intercept them. And then instead of, you know, putting a bullet or an arrow through them, you're trying to put a fly within 8 to 10 inches of their mouth at the, you know, right presentation, right speed, so that you're not spooking them. And luckily for me, the Denver South Platte is one of those places that, you know, carp were introduced early, you know, back in the day, like late 1800s, early 1900s, for a secondary food source during like famished times. And, you know, carp is like one of the top 10 invasive species around the world, you know, but obviously in Europe and Asia, they're kind of a coveted trophy fish. You know, we have an abundance of carp throughout our stretches of river here in Denver, South Platte. And I'm fortunate that I get to go out and challenge myself on a daily basis, right? Like, I think it's one of the most challenging freshwater fish that you can try to get in a net on a fly rod.
Yeah, man, that's super cool. So kind of getting more into like where you're doing this. So you're like right in the middle of town. Is that correct?
Yeah, smack dab in the middle of town.
Like skyscrapers like next to you, like underneath
bridges. You got skyscrapers, football stadiums, amusement parks with old wooden roller coasters, you know, shaking behind you, right next to the sewage treatment facility where the smells aren't so nice. And, you know, you've got to deal with some unsightly, you know, things sometimes. There's some unhoused population, right? Yeah. That you walk across. So, but no, it's kind of the thrill of the chase, right?
I was going to say that. That's pretty wild. Environment, yeah. Right?
Yeah. You see something different every time you're carping. And I think one of the coolest things is, you know, fishing in the South Platte in Denver, it's a very active city, right? So Denver spent a bunch of money, redoing the greenway and the green space along the South Platte to make it more of a recreation area, not just an industrial river, like it's been used for over 100 years. And so you'll see bikers and rollerbladers rolling by and they're like, there's fish in this river. And then they see you pull out a carp and you get an applause from the audience. It's like, oh, this is kind of cool, man. You don't get this on the trout stream.
Nice. Like,
and then the one of the best parts about it is you're in an urban environment where people really don't want to fish as often, unless they're a little bit adventurous. And so you rarely run into another angler.
Yeah.
And unlike trout fishing, when you run into other anglers, you're trying to, you know, leapfrog each other and keep your distance. Like I've gone out and run into some random carp anglers here and they're like, hey, let's team up. It's a two-person effort. Like if I get on this bridge and hook this fish, can you help me net it? So that, you know, that plays into the excitement as well.
All right. So, we have not carping. I like that term. We have not ventured that way. We do know of some places where there are some carp locally to us that we could probably explore on. So let's just, you know, if you're going carping for the first time, we'll get into setup a minute, but you know, my thing about carp is I've never seen them actively feeding when I've seen carp. Maybe that's just not, I've been not looking for them the right time of year, or maybe, but do they actively feed like maybe some other fish that we target?
Yeah. So they actively feed, but they're not like predatory fish. They're more of an opportunist type eater. So, you know, as a bass is going to come out from under a tree and strike a streamer you're stripping by, you're not necessarily going to see that with carp. Every once in a while you will. So there's kind of two methods that carp will feed. They have that barbell mouth that kind of sits on the bottom. They're more of a sucker fish, right? So one of the telltale signs you look for when carp are feeding, there's kind of three different categories of fish. There's tailers, there's cruisers, and there's cloopers. And typically the fish that I like to go after are the tailers. So they are tail up, typically out of the water. If it's shallow water, like 6 inches or 6 to 8 inches, you can see their tail actively in that golden tail fanning out of the water. And their mouth is actively sucking on the bottom. And what they're doing, they don't have teeth. So they suck the sediment in, you know, and then they can taste and feel what they're sucking in. And if it's not edible, they spit it back out immediately. If it's edible, they push it to the back of their mouth where they have crushers where they actually consume the food. So those are the carp that are the easiest to catch. The second category is the cruisers. When carp swim together in pods, they're kind of like dolphins, right? And they're just kind of moving from place to place, either mating or just kind of relocating to get to their feeding areas. Carp typically like to feed in the same area. So like you eat at your dinner table, carp like to go back to a familiar place in the river and feed at their dinner table. So typically if they're cruising by, you might be able to catch one of them, but more likely than not, if you try to cast to them, you're going to spook them and then blow up that hole for probably the next hour or two. And then the third category you have is something called cloopers. And I'm kind of confused if they're feeding or doing something else, but you'll typically see some foam slick where a bunch of carp are potted up under a fallen tree or branch, and you'll see their mouths just coming out and you're kind of making a clooping sound, mm-hmm. and they're sucking on the top of the water. I've heard, you know, they're feeding on midges, they're feeding on cottonwood seeds. I know I got a buddy that fishes in New York and they feed on, you know, blackberries or any other kind of wild berries that fall, grasshoppers. I have not been successful catching those in the river. It's a challenge of mine. So I kind of stick to what I know and fish for the feeders. I like to go at the high percentage. Like I know the fish is eating. All I got to do is not spook them and get the fly in that, you know, 8 to 10 inch zone and they'll dive on it.
So what, let's just break it down for setup. You said you asked your buddy, he said, don't worry about your 5 weight. So what kind of setup do you prefer maybe for when you go out carping?
So I'm pretty rough on rods in the urban environment. I think I've broken my rod, one of the rods I have, like 4 times, but I've got a good replacement program. So
There you go,
you know,
yeah.
pay the 25 to 40 bucks and get a new tip because I typically break them. But I right now I'm rocking a 7 foot, excuse me, a 10, I got a 10 foot 7 weight Temple Fork Outfitters BVK. So I've got that one, and then I've got a 9 foot 7 weight Temple Fork Outfitters, the Axiom 2. So I run those, and then I run the Cheeky Forerunner 425, excuse me, Cheeky Limitless 425 reel. So it's that large arbor reel because I like to have a larger arbor. It's like 4 and a quarter inches. So as you're reeling in, you're retrieving more line than you would with a small arbor reel. So 7 weight, you know, any floating line will work, right? Floating tip line. And I got sick of buying leaders and tippets, so I just build my own. Just bought some fluoro on Amazon. I run a 20 foot, tw or excuse me, a 5 foot 25 pound section with a perfection loop to loop connection on the fly line, and then tie off a blood knot for 20 pound on the bottom. And I run anywhere from a 7 to 11 foot leader, depending on which part of the river I'm fishing in. If it's narrow and I'm standing up on the banks, I run a 7 foot leader because I'm mostly just dropping the fly kind of right off the bank into the fish's mouth. If I'm going to be casting further out, you're typically not casting far when you're carp fishing because you're sight fishing, but I'll run an 11 foot leader so that my fly line, when it hits the water, it's not over the fish's head. It's that fluoro, and it's kind of an easier presentation on the water, so you're not spooking the carp. Because unlike trout, you splash a fly near 20 carp, just keep it moving, man. You're not catching one of those, go to the
Done.
next spot.
That's cool to know.
Yeah.
So what kind of flies are you using for these guys?
Yeah, so it's kind of the
Without
flies
giving
that I
away too many
use
secrets.
are crayfish related patterns, right?
Okay, yeah.
And I'm not a fly purist at all by any means. I tie up flies, I tie up janky flies that don't look like anything,
Oh,
and
yeah.
just so they have some contrast in the water, some buggy or crustacean like,
Maybe
you know,
we
property.
found something I can tie. Maybe we found something that
Tie
I can tie. I
carpal.
could tie carp flies there.
Hey. I know you guys had George Daniels on the podcast recently, and I had met with him and did you know, a tying event recently, virtually here in Denver with one of my buddies. And I love the guy because he was like, he's not a purist at all. He ties what he thinks works and what he knows works, and he's tested. And so I got into that. And so, like, if we were to name a couple flies that I used when I was first starting out, there's a guy named In the Riffle on YouTube. He's a guy that's like South Denver in the Littleton area. Tons of experience. He's got this thing called the common carp crawler, and that's the first fly that I started tying. So it was just like some medium eyes, lead eyes, marabou, a little bit of fox, peacock hurl on like a size, you know, you can go anywhere from size 10 to 4 depending on what type of hook. I'll use like a Gamakatsu SL45 bonefish hook, not a trout hook, because you want something a little bit more sturdy, because I've straightened hooks out. So I've been going with like
Oh, wow.
bonefish style saltwater hooks. And yeah, most of the flies I tie are crayfish type patterns. So either medium, mini, lead eyes, or bead chain when I really want a soft presentation but a good sink rate. I'll do, you know, some bead chain with some olive marabou and some Cohen's carp dub and a thorax. And then I got a buddy out here, Daryl Eakins. He's a pretty popular guy, Nervous Water Flies on Instagram. He's got a couple Umpqua signature patterns. So he's got like the Detroit Mop City. That's a pretty dope fly. It's a mop fly. It works really well for smallies, trout, and carp as well. So,
Really cool. All right, so approaching these fish, because this is what we're trying to get at, because we want to learn how to do
yeah.
this. We see them a lot on the river that we float. Now, do you ever float these rivers? You're pretty much wading
No,
next to them, right?
I'm just wet wading
Yeah.
mostly, and then in the wintertime, I got my, you know, waders on.
Yeah,
But
for
yeah,
sure.
just wet wading.
So you're wading for these things. We've also got a lake close by that we know holds them. You were talking about that third category, those what'd you call them? The Cloopers, yeah.
Cloopers.
We see them doing that all the time at that lake because they hide like underneath. They get underneath like the trees out there that are dropping like walnuts or acorns and stuff like that into the lake, and they're going nuts for these things. So I think we could target these bad boys at some time. I'm kind of dying to, but so what are you thinking as you approach these fish? You said you're sight fishing. You're looking for those happy tailors. It reminds me of redfish so much. It's crazy.
It does.
So when you're looking for these things, like kind of what's your thought process going into your mind? Are you trying to figure out where they're headed next? How are you figuring out how to present your fly? What's kind of your
Yeah,
take?
so I'll take it even a step further back. I'm like, there's two different approaches that I'll look at, whether I'm going to fish still water or if I'm going to fish a river. Like, and typically what I do, I get up in the morning, I'll look at the weather, see what the weather looks like, right? How much sun is there going to be? Because sun is really a factor when you're sight fishing, so you can see. And then I definitely look at the stream gauges because, you know, here in the South Platte's urban fishery, if we've got 300 CFS through our urban corridor, it's going to be pretty murky and nasty, and it's not going to be advantageous for sight fishing. So then that'll help me determine if I'm going still water or if I'm fishing a river. So for river, right, especially in an urban environment, you've got the advantage of high banks, steep banks, right? Because the rivers were kind of channeled for floodplaining, right? So the banks are high so that the river can fill up. And then you've got a lot of urban infrastructure, bridges, right? And that is key. Like, I love getting on top of a bridge, looking down the river, looking upstream and downstream and finding where the fish are, where they're feeding. And then once you identify, okay, that's where they are, you got to set up your approach, right? And I'll, you know, if one's on the east side of the bank, we got a pot of five carp on the east side, I'll typically make my way over there. And the first fish, if I find a group of five feeding, the one that I want to go to is the one that's furthest downstream. And the reason I do that, right, is because if I hook up on that fish, it's obviously going to take off with the natural current and go downstream. I don't want to spook the upstream fish so that I can get a shot at him. So a lot of times you're bushwhacking through thistle, you know, climbing over down trees or shopping carts and, you know, dodging needles or whatever, you know, is out there on the riverbank. So you got to be pretty precarious, pretty cautious about how you're getting through that precarious situation. Also trying not to make a lot of noise, right? Because carp have a pretty strong lateral line. They sense the vibrations, they can hear. So you got to be spooky approaching the water. So typically muted colors, right? Some natural colors is what I wear, you know, in terms of like a sun hoodie and pants, nothing neon or bright, and kind of use the trees and the bushes as cover, which is great for, you know, concealing yourself, but it is frustrating how many times you'll get snagged and break rods and, yeah. You know, get a little too excited. You get snagged. So that's kind of the approach for the river that I'll take. And, you know, obviously, you know, still water is a little bit different. Still water, you're kind of level. The banks are typically level with the water. So there's not as much cover and concealment, but you'll have to deal with cattails and all that such. The fish are a little spookier in still water, in my opinion. And they don't feed as actively on the bottom and tail. You know, certain sections where it's muddy or there's a sand flat, you know, you can go after those feeders. But the cloopers are always out, and I always spook the cloopers. So I'm not an expert in that situation. I'll go see a pot of 50 cloopers clooping, and I'm tossing a grasshopper or cottonwood seed out there, perfect presentation, letting it sit for 5 minutes, and they come up and bump it, and then just keep going off. So if anyone out there has got advice, let me know, because I fail at it.
So you've done all your preparation. You've presented the fly.
Yeah.
What happens when you hook into one of these bad boys?
So a lot of things can happen, right? So you do your presentation. I'm using the drag and drop technique. My buddy Rick here in Denver, he's Rick Mikesell. He's a great guy. He's kind of perfected that technique. And what you're essentially doing is you're casting your fly out, right? And you're dragging the fly high in the water column until right before you get over the carp's head. And then you're slowly dropping the tip of your rod into the, you know, tip of the rod down so that the fly can drop into the feeding zone in that 6 to 8 inches. And typically the carp will either eat the fly pretty aggressively on the drop as it's dropping through the column, or they'll hit it when it hits the bottom. Mm. And the second you see the fly eat, you have to hook set. And that's one of the challenges with carp fishing. If you're fishing in murky conditions or bad conditions where you can't see your fly, you can't judge when the carp eats, and you'll miss your hook set and spook the fish. So the second, you know, you see that carp's mouth open and he kind of turns on your fly, you set the hook. And you better make sure your drag is tight, because it's going to take off and it's going to run you to backing. It's, you know, that desert, that Rocky Mountain desert bonefish.
I love that's what you call them. Yeah. Desert bonefish.
Run you to backing. I mean, 2 days ago, I was out with my buddy, you know, and had my drag loosened because I store it in my rod vault, you know, to keep it, you know, preserved. And I hadn't tightened it up. So, of course, I was using a fly that I had gotten snagged on earlier, and it kind of straightened out. I bent it back with my forceps. I didn't set my drag. The carp takes off, shoots into the fast water. And I was like, I got to tighten my drag or I'm going to lose him. And I, 1, 2, 3 clicks, the hook straightened out again. The carp came off.
Oh, man.
So, like, preparation is key, right? Like, don't, you know, be so anxious that you make mistakes, because you'll make a mistake and you'll lose a fish. And that's the only fish you're going to get for the day. So I've been in tons of situations like that, but it's the most exhilarating feeling seeing a carp just take off downstream and start peeling back and away. And you're fighting them sometimes, 7 to 10 minutes of fighting a carp. And I'm not a high altitude native, right? I'm from sea level Baltimore. So I had to get my mountain lungs on me, because you're pretty spent after reeling in a 10 to 15 pound fish for 10 minutes.
You got cans of oxygen in your pack. You just like get the little puff every now and then.
See, I keep my liquid IV in here, because you get dehydrated out there, and I'm about to be 35. I'm not built like I used to be.
There you go. That's wild, man. Nick, this is so cool. I think we've had this conversation with a lot of people. Fly fishing, most people think out in the middle of nowhere, trout, pretty heavy trout focus, which absolutely, I love that. But Josh and I talk about this all the time, like embracing those short trips, especially as young dads, like figuring out where we can go and going and doing what we can when we can. And exactly. sounds like you've mastered that there in Denver, man. I mean, that is so cool.
It's either fish and your wife be upset because you're gone for all day, and then you neglecting your responsibilities as a dad, or find a way to bring a happy medium and target some other species that are closer to home. And that's what I kind of been rocking with. It's fly fishing is one of those things that you said, it's like someone fishing in a mountain stream with all this expensive gear on, but it's a super accessible sport that anyone can do, no matter where you're, where you are. If you're in an alpine mountain stream, in the Vail Valley in Colorado, or in the city of Baltimore or Denver, right? Anyone can fly fish, and it's accessible to everyone. Just challenge you, to get out and do it, jump into something new, and then it'll open up your world.
So we talked about that a little bit, what you're saying there, through our text message thread. And I wanted to speak a little bit to something that you do, that you mentioned that's important to you. I think it is, getting, young kids, correct? Urban kids.
Yeah. Just kind of anyone. So, when I first started fly fishing, my friends, who introduced me, his dad told me, hey, make sure whatever you do, get involved in some type of nonprofit, Trout Unlimited or whatever, so that you can make connections during fly fishing. And when I started out, right, like there's not many people that look like me, black urban kids that are out fly fishing. If you look at all the manufacturers' ads and websites, it's you don't see too many guys. And I know a couple of guys that do it, and those are my buddies here in Denver. It's not marketed to everyone. And it's kind of unfortunate, right? It's a sport that's very attainable. It doesn't have to be expensive. And so what I did when I came out to Denver is I joined up with my local Denver Trout Unlimited chapter, where I'm now one of the youth program coordinators for our chapter, and primarily running the Trout in the Classroom program, which is a nationwide Trout Unlimited program. But here in Denver, we have about 6 tanks dispersed throughout the city in urban school districts and one university building. And we work with Colorado Parks and Wildlife to deliver eggs to the trout tanks in the fall semester, and teach kids how to raise trout, right? Teach them about conservation, and, fish ecology and biology. And it's pretty cool to see urban kids engaged in something that they never would have done before. And I was in an environmental science school in middle school, and I raised fish in a fish tank, mostly like cichlids and, more warm water species. But it's been pretty cool to give back and do that. And so we're expanding our programming from Trout in the Classroom to get more youth engagement focus and focus in some of our partnerships with schools here to get kids out and fly fish for the first time. I work with one of my buddies. He's got an organization called Community Fly Fishing here in Denver. And their whole focus is to bring underrepresented populations into fly fishing. So we do things like fly tie nights. We had George Daniels, a special guest, one night teaching newcomers how to tie flies for the first time. And then we've also partnered with a couple organizations like Vail Valley Anglers and Patagonia. And they've sponsored some pretty cool events where we've taken groups of folks, underrepresented populations that have never fly fished before, out to private water stretches in the Vail Valley, in Avon and Eagle to fish, the Eagle River. And then up here and outside of Fort Collins at like Colorado Nature Preserve, Nature Preserve's Phantom Canyon, right? And get them a weekend on the river for free, all gear, lessons included. And we teach them how to fish and teach them what it's about, right? And teach them about nature and just have them, be in touch. It's a really powerful thing, and I really enjoy it.
That's too cool, man. It's so awesome to hear that. I want to make sure when we, you know, we hop off here to get some of those things in the show notes for anybody listening out there in those areas. We'd love to get them connected with you guys. Maybe somebody wants to help with what you're doing. Just speak to why personally that is so important to you. You mentioned it, like, you know, there's not a lot of representation, and you know, I talked to Caleb about this from a diverse aspect. Sometimes in fly fishing, it's got that kind of older, you know, it used to be the old, we've had this conversation with a lot of guests that are really big in the space, you know, and they're like, yeah, it used to just be the old white guy on the weekend, or, you know, out with it, you know, that was kind of the perception of fly fishing. We've seen it change. I think it still obviously needs to progress and change even more. And so, one, why is that, you know, so important to you? And two, like, what can we continually do as anglers in our spaces to kind of see that continually to grow?
Yeah, so I think, like, the key to representation is not just about race, it's about accessibility for anyone, right? The environment that you grow into, like we mentioned, like, fly fishing is not the cheapest thing to do. So when I look at, you know, maybe when I was a kid, I didn't get introduced to fly fishing or know much about it. I grew up in a, you know, single parent household. You know, my mom couldn't support me going out to do that. And she wasn't exposed to fly fishing. She didn't know what it was about. I didn't know what it was about. And I think the real important thing here is that give someone an opportunity for them to try something that they've never done before, and they might fall in love with it. It, you know, it might pull them into something, a career, a profession, right? Some volunteership, but it gives, you know, a unique opportunity for folks that wouldn't, you know, normally be presented with it, to find something within themselves that they really enjoy and connect with nature. So, like, it's super soothing for me, especially, like, as a military vet dealing with the stresses of combat. And, you know, I use it as a way to connect with nature, wind down and relax and not get frustrated. But, you know, I still do get frustrated when I don't catch fish. So it kind of wipes all that out. Yeah. It's a cool sport. It's a cool way to connect with yourself, learn about yourself, to challenge yourself. So I really encourage, like, folks out there, just, you know, teach someone new about fly fishing, no matter what their background is, their race, religion, right, their ethnicity. Get them out there. It's super exciting and rewarding to teach someone how to catch fish on the fly rod, and then watching someone catch their first fish for the first time, you can see it, why people get hooked and why they spend so much time doing it.
Yeah, man, for sure. Well, I think it's awesome, Nick, what you're doing there, and trying to help present this amazing sport that's done so much for us. Like, sounds like it's done so much for you. To people who maybe otherwise wouldn't get exposed to it. And I think that's really great. I think it's something we can all as anglers aspire to do. And, you know, sometimes that feels like a really big daunting task, but it may be just be finding somebody else that you can take fishing. And I think that's something really important we can all do.
Yeah. It's one of the things I was working with Trout Unlimited recently, and they have kind of a, like, diversity, equity, and inclusion kind of monthly call, and they're just trying to think of strategy. And you're looking at, like, the old Trout Unlimited, what Trout Unlimited has been able to do in terms of conservation, you know, nationally, preserving rivers, removing dams so that salmon can return to their native spawning habitats. Like, that stuff's been done for years, right? And with the evolution of the internet and social media and the younger generations coming up, you're not going to be able to keep the same momentum you have unless you outreach to new people and get new people involved.
Yeah.
And part of that is, like, diversifying your audience. And so really that's one of the things that I want to do here, is so that I can pass the same conservation message on to younger generations of people that look like me, so that maybe they'll get involved, so that they can, you know, pass on this sport and nature, to their offspring.
For sure, man. That's so cool. Well, Nick, we're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna come back and dive into a little bit more of your story. You are a fairly new dad. We're gonna hear a little bit more about your daughter here in just a minute. We're excited to talk about that. So we'll take a short break, and we will be right back. We want to give a big thank you to a sponsor of this episode, Turtle Box Audio. Joshua, TurtleBox audio speakers, the most rugged, loudest outdoor speaker on the market.
we just continue to not be able to say enough great things about these things.
Yeah, if you've heard any of our episodes in the last 2 months, maybe even longer than that, you know how much we love our TurtleBox audio. The other day, we were playing pickleball, and Corbin was like, hey, where's the TurtleBox? So it's not just for fishing. It's for anything you do. You got to get a TurtleBox audio for your family adventures, anywhere you're going, whether it's out on the water or just on a beach trip or in a mountain, any kind of trip. You're hanging out outside. Nothing better than having a TurtleBox audio blast some tunes or listen to an episode of Dazzle Fly Podcast. So get your TurtleBox audio today at turtleboxaudio.com.
Yeah, check them out and get whatever type of custom speaker you want there at turtleboxaudio.com.
And we're back with Mr. Nick Hall. Nick, man, we has been so just talking off air there at the break, cool about carp fishing. You know, I didn't mention this, Caleb, but we now have a direct flight from Asheville to Denver. Just saying, you know, like that, I mean, I could even see myself like flying if cheap enough. I could just fly in for like a day, just do some urban fishing and I wouldn't even get a hotel, just hit the urban right from the airport and get back out of town.
Come on out and I'll show you around.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll love it.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing, man, that kind of drew us Dads on the Fly, we obviously, you know, you're on Instagram scrolling feeds and you see, you know, you do it too. You see all these different fish pictures and, you know, I can look at fish pictures and that nothing really catches my eye anymore because there's fish everywhere. But what kind of brought us to you, man, was, you know, your daughter in some of these pictures, either on your back or some of the ones where she's just smiling and happy with you catching fish. So I think your daughter's a year now, correct?
Yeah, so she's like 13 months. Yeah,
there
13
you go.
Months yeah. now. So she's just started walking. She's a year old and first kid, and it's an amazing
it's
blessing.
An adventure,
man,
right?
Yeah. So what about that's been so cool for you to kind of have her on some of these adventures with you?
I think the first piece is my addiction to fishing, right? Like the only way that you can be addicted to fish and fish with the baby is if you bring them with you, right?
There you go.
And, you know, when they're the young baby, right, the, you know, the 3 to 6 months, they can't really move. They kind of just stay put. You know, my wife and I decided to start trying it out, and we took her out to the Frying Pan River, carrying her in the baby Bjorn in October and just kind of wading and catching trout. And I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And, you know, I'm showing her the fish I catch, and she could care less. Just like half the people who see our posts on Instagram, she's not excited. But like in the past 3 months, like I've been taking her out carping with me. And I put her in the pack, and she's either excited, you know, making a whole bunch of noise, scaring the fish away, or starts clapping or, you know, getting excited when I catch fish. So to see that she's interested in something that I'm interested in, whether she has a choice or not, it's just, you know, it's a cool opportunity for me to connect and just bond and be with my daughter. And, you know, and then about 75% of the time she's passed out in that backpack with me. So this is kind of a funny story. On Sunday, me and my buddy went to go out and do some carp practice. We're fishing this tournament upcoming. And I was like, all right, well, my wife's got something to do today, so the only way I'm going is I'm bringing the baby. And he's like, all right, well, my son's not coming today. So I was like, all right, well, I'm bringing the baby, so I'm going to carry in this baby Bjorn. You know, I was in the infantry in the Marine Corps. I'm used to carrying a bunch of weight on my back and moving. And that was 15 years ago. So I get the baby in the back and we're like, all right, we got to cross the river, climb up this steep section, cut through, you know, this brush. And literally, I kid you not, the first 2 minutes of walking, I go to walk up the hill, I grab a tree to pull myself up, and now I can't really move my shoulder, and my back's like been spasming for 4 days. So, you know, the sacrifices you make for carrying an extra 30 pounds on you to go fish, it keeps you humble, but it's an awesome opportunity to get out there and be out there on the water with my daughter.
Yeah, well, there's just so many more, like, you know, we've talked to other people about this, some good friends of ours that live over Tennessee that did this with their kids, were young, kind of backpack hiking and stuff. And just a couple more, you know, necessity gears you got to have there when it comes to like diapers and snacks and some of that stuff. So not only are you adding the kid there, you're adding some of the essentials you got to bring with you that are going to weigh you down a little more.
The water, the diapers, the snacks, the breast milk, you know, making sure you got ice packs to keep the milk at the right temperature so it doesn't spoil.
Oh, man, yes.
You know, putting the bottle in the backpack and then forgetting to put the cap under the nipple.
Oh,
and so you're like, oh, you everywhere. Want some milk? And then you got a whole backpack full of just milk that's just cooking in the sun. So, you know?
And that's trout. Why we love fishing, folks.
Yeah.
There you go.
Like, yeah, there's no, right
you
there,
know
man.
You really love fishing when you're ready to do all that and still catch fish.
Yes. Yep, yeah, it's like the amount of effort that you put into it. My wife's like, it's crappy weather outside. You know, why don't we just, I'm like, no, we got to go fish. And And then she comes back and I'm like, I hurt my back. She's like, I told you so. And I'm like,
it's funny.
All right. But it's all worth it.
All right. So you've been taking your daughter since she, like you said, like 36 months. You've been doing it a lot. What tips you got for us that dads who have really young kids that want to take them out there? Like what's your biggest tip?
The first step is proving to your wife that you're capable of doing it.
Okay. Mine
is
a little... I like that. That's
so like a short She's trip, a bringing tip. Her back alive, like everything's okay. Look, not a scratch on her. We did it.
Yep. So prove to the wife that the baby will be safe, that you're physically capable of carrying the baby.
Yeah.
So maybe hit the gym a little bit and, you know, buff up so that the wife feels confident. One thing that was cool for me is like some of the community here, the fly fish community, saw that I had a kid on Instagram and they reached out. My friend Brittany was like, "Hey, I got this backpack that I've only used for 6 months." And it was one of those like Osprey, like Poco wow. Plus backpacks. And she hooked it up. Those backpacks were super, super expensive. I bought it from her. And you know, that thing has been a lifesaver, man, because it's super comfortable. The baby can sit comfortably. It's got a shade protector or a sun protector, or rain protector. And that's really, you know, that's what I take out. And the second piece, like fly fishing, especially for carp, like if you're going to go out with a baby, make sure you go with a buddy, right? So if something happens to you, you got someone to call the ambulance if you need it, if you break a leg. But then also, like, I can't carry my, like, I have a sling pack. When I have the backpack on, I can't carry my sling pack with my fly. So the flies are in the back bottom of the backpack. So my buddy will have to grab the flies out if I need to change flies, because I'm not taking that 30-pound pack off with the baby and sitting it down to get a fly out and change and put it back on. And then he carries his net. So whether he, you know, I catch a fish, he'll net it for me. If he catches a fish, I'll grab his net and net it for him. So it's kind of, you know, it takes a village to fish with a baby. Right. Like it takes a little confidence, a little insanity, and you'll be able to deal with a little bit of screaming, crying, and backaches. You can get it done.
Yeah, man. But just seeing your passion with your daughter on some of those things and some of those videos you post, I feel like it's almost in a place now where you would have it no other way, right? Like you've embraced it so much as a father, and how much that has changed you. Maybe, I mean, you seem like a super happy person in our conversation, everything we've done, but it's almost just added to your joy. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I'm excited this weekend. We're doing a river cleanup here in Denver. And I said, "Hey, babe, are you coming to the river cleanup? We're going to clean up the river." She's like, "Really?" I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "We're bringing the baby too." She's like, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Are we?" So I get excited to go out and spend time with my daughter, because being outside is what I loved as a kid. And I try to, you know, force that upon her too. So she's as excited when she gets older about going outside, right? Because kids, you know, tend to take interest in what their parents do and then some of the first memories that they have. And I really just want this to be a part of who she is, and spending time with dad and getting out and fishing and being one with nature.
Yeah, man. I think getting kids outside, you know, we've talked so many people on our show about that, of just not just because it gets them away from the screens and all that, but like there's just something to be said about being outdoors. You know, even when you live, and you're real good proof of this, even when you live in an urban environment, like, you know, when it's the concrete jungle type place, you know what they call it, like there's still opportunity there. Like, you might have to get creative in what it looks like, but there's still opportunity there and enjoying the outdoors. And so I think that's really cool that you figured out ways to do that.
Exactly. Like, I challenge people to just get outside and explore no matter where you are. All you have to do is put on your shoes or not put on your shoes, walk out the door and explore, right? Don't be fooled by the marketing campaign that is everything is, you know, in pristine mountain streams or private water, right? You can access a fishing environment pretty much in every city in America. So yeah, get out and do it and you won't look back.
I've kind of become the person who says if there's water, there's bound to be something. There's bound to be a fish living in it. I don't know what kind of fish, but there's bound to be something I can find in there, right?
That's when you're driving down the road with your family, you see a stream, and you're like,
that's why
peeking over to look at the water where you should be looking at the road.
That's right? Why whenever we go places, Joshua doesn't drive. Like, I'm always driving.
Not only that, it's so bad. Like, my wife almost prepares now. Like, if she knows, like, we're coming up on a creek or a pond or, like, any kind of body of water, she kind of, like, starts grabbing me, like, don't look. She knows that that's going to happen for sure.
Exactly.
It's just crazy. It just, when you become so into it, you just wonder what is out there that I can seek. And in our case, you know, it's what is out there I can go after and target with a fly rod. And what kind of fly rod can I use, and what kind of fly can I maybe tie or find, or to get whatever this fish is to eat. You mentioned just how fun it is to be out with your daughter. And, you know, you said something, you know, right now she doesn't really know the difference, right? She's out there with dad. She's having fun. She's smiling. She's laughing. And we've talked to other people. And I think what's important, what you're doing, is that may not stick. Like, she may get to be like 9 or 10 and be like, yeah, I have no care to fish anymore. Maybe yeah. even earlier than that. But she may want to be with, she'll want to be with you because she was with you. You know what I mean? And then you find something that she's still out there with you. Maybe she's, you know, taking pictures of you doing it. Maybe you don't know what her interests are going to be, but we talk about that a lot with people. And I think it's wise. What you've done is you started her young. Doesn't necessarily mean, like, you know, your heart's going to be broken if she doesn't, you know, turn into this great flying girl. That's what we say all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I definitely want, as I raise my kid, I think it's important for your kid to, you'd be free to foster some type of individuality and freedom with your kid, and freedom of choice and you know, what they want to do. But at the same time, it's, if I can plant the seed, you know, that it might happen to sprout one day into her obsession and love of fly fishing, I wouldn't be too upset with that.
And nobody would cry about that. I mean,
yeah, I would just cry tears of happiness.
Of joy, you know? Right? Of joy, for sure. Well, Nick, you brought this up kind of earlier in our conversation, and I wanted to kind of circle back to it. You talked about what fly fishing has really done for you. You mentioned the fact that you're a former Marine, which, thank you, by the way, for your service. You've done some tours and stuff like that. Yeah, man. And you got back to the States. You moved to Denver. How has fly fishing been so beneficial to you just as a person? Like, why do you think you keep going back to it?
Yeah, I think one of the things it does is it challenges my ADD first, right? Like, I was in the infantry in the Marine Corps. I was a mortarman, so, like, you know, it's a very high pace, you know, job where you're fighting the fight and you're used to being outside in tough conditions. And now I'm a cybersecurity engineer for a software company. I sit at a desk in my basement right here, you know, all day, every day. And I'm looking at spreadsheets and network architecture diagrams and government regulations. And, you know, it pays the bills. It's challenging mentally, but it's not fulfilling for me.
Yeah.
So I get kind of stir crazy. My wife can always tell when I need to be outside or I need to do something. And I hadn't had that type of hobby in a while. So, you know, fly fishing has kind of centered me, really, and been able to help me just kind of challenge myself, right, to do something that's difficult from scratch and learn it. You know, I wouldn't say I'm perfecting it yet. I still have a long way to go, but start the basis of knowledge that I can apply and challenge myself with a, you know, daily basis. And it's helped my mental health, right. Overall. And it just gives me that, you know, that peace and serenity of being outside in nature with honking cars and trains going by and the smells of sewage treatment plants. Right. If you can kind of find your peace amongst all the noise, right? That truly is your passion and is something that's beneficial to you.
You've spoken a couple times about some different buddies, some people maybe who've mentored you or kind of helped you out when you started, some friends of yours that you now fish with. I was curious, you know, as a former a Marine, have you been able to do that for others? Maybe some or encourage some people that, you know, you served with to say, hey, maybe you should try fly fishing. I know we've talked to other people. We had a guide on one of our buddies from Tennessee who found fly fishing through, I think, Project Healing Waters, correct? Like, that's how he found me. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you've been able to kind of help some other people get into fly fishing.
Yeah. So, like, from a veteran perspective, I haven't really, because I must have been targeting just kind of youth and whoever wants to be involved.
Yeah.
But I did. I was fortunate enough to work with an Army soldier when I did a community fly fishing event out in Vail. And it was pretty cool. This guy had like 20 years in the Army, and he had a pretty, pretty fancy job in the Army. And, you know, the first thing as a Marine I do when I meet an Army soldier is you talk trash, right?
Yeah, of course.
it was awesome to just get up in his grill and talk a little bit of trash and then get out on the water with him and just share our war stories while we're on a nice stream in the Vail Valley and see him progress from, you know, being the strong head, you know, master sergeant that was in the Army with 20 years of experience to to listening to the stupid jarhead that knew a couple of things, and he started catching fish, and you know, the look on his face was priceless. The connection was awesome. So yeah, it is pretty cool. I've seen, you know, Project Healing Waters doing their workout here in Denver. Just haven't been really involved in that. I have a lot of military buddies, and I hang out with my military buddies, and I've tried to get a couple into fly fishing, but vets are stubborn. I want to work with people that are coachable. There
you go. But isn't it so cool? Like you talked about your time with that guy. It's so cool to me just in this last kind of 2 years of me. I mean, you know, Caleb and I have fished. We talked about this a lot on the show. We fished for 10 or 11 years now, fly fished. But when you really get into like this space, like, you know, you're kind of part of the community, like in your case in Colorado with all these people. And now it's like you get on an airplane or you're at a restaurant and you see maybe an Orvis or a Sims hat or you see something even more detailed, like, hey, this guy probably ties flies. Like you just tell, you know, like all of a sudden it's like you're instantly connected. And that's what's so cool about the fly fishing community. And you've kind of spoken about it. How cool has it been for those people, like you said, the lady who kind of got you the backpack and some of these other people in Trout Unlimited, just kind of in your short time doing it, like just kind of wrap their arms around you kind of figuratively and kind of take you into the club, man?
Oh, it's been awesome, man. Like it was a very receptive community. And, you know, people are always down to share knowledge or experience. And, you know, what there's always gear suggestions too. I'm like, I don't want to spend any more money, but, you know, the invites that you get, you know, the people that want you to fish with them and go on trips. You know, I went to Mexico with a bunch of dudes I met on Instagram to fish for tarpon a few months ago. And wow, that would have never happened if I, you know, didn't just, you know, hop into the fly fishing and start posting my videos to Instagram. So it's been a pretty unique and humbling experience that just keeps giving. So
where'd you go back in Mexico? Just if you don't mind asking.
We're down in Campeche, the Yucatan Peninsula. Yeah. Okay. We're down on the west coast of the Yucatan in the Gulf, fishing for tarpon in Campeche with Campeche tarpon. So that was it was a blast. I jumped a couple fish. I lost more fish than I landed because I was trout setting. So lesson learned. I'll be back next year and I'm going to catch some more.
I was going to say, how did that compare to some of those big carp? You know, is there any similarities? Yeah.
I love carp, but I love tarpon more, man. It just, it costs a little bit more money. You need a little bit more time away from home to go fish for tarpon. So
yeah, I guess your double haul kind of had to come a little more in play maybe than the carp.
Oh, I don't double haul half the time.
That's tarpon, me. So
exactly. I was out at the park recording videos, soliciting Instagram feedback for how bad my cast was. So I got it down now. I was getting some 75, 80 footer casts out there.
That's cool, man. Now, are you planning any more travel, or have you done any more traveling for like fishing?
Hey, I'm a dad. I get one trip a year.
Oh, so. There you go, buddy.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Alaska next year because
sweet.
One of my, you know, my best friend that got me into fly fishing, his dad's got some health issues, and unfortunately they already paid for a trip. So, he subbed me in for it. So crappy situation. I'd love to get out there with his dad and fish, but we're going to go fish for like 9 different species, like king salmon, you know, dolly varden, grayling, and some big trout. So I'm super pumped to do that next August.
That's cool, man. Well, yeah. You know, we're in the part of the country where one of our trips is probably going to be coming out to see you. So, we're dying. I've spent some time in Colorado fly fishing. So such an amazing place out there, and hopefully going to be getting to go back and pretty soon.
Yeah, I have one follow-up. You keep mentioning a couple places. So just for, you know, the person who hasn't spent a lot of time in Colorado, the last time I was in Colorado, I think I was skiing probably for when I was graduating high school. Yeah. So it's been quite a while. But if you look at Denver, I know Caleb was out there in Colorado a year ago now, maybe. You've talked a little bit about the river that flows through Denver, the South Platte, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And then you also talked about the Vail Valley. I mean, is that kind of like where the ski places are up in that area?
Yeah. So right through Vail, Edwards, Avon, there's the Eagle River. And I believe that's it's a freestone water. So it's not river. So it's not connected to any dams out in Vail. Yeah. It's a great spot to fish through Edwards and a couple other locations through there. And then you've got the South Platte, which is a pretty unique waterway because it spans from the mountains in Colorado through the urban environment in Denver off to Nebraska. So it provides a lot of water resources for the state of Colorado and surrounding states. But great fisheries. The South Platte's more diverse in that, you know, it goes from the mountainous landscape where you're catching cutbows and, you know, long-nose suckers, native, you know, fish to the long-nose suckers, one of the native fish to the South Platte Basin. But then you get into Denver and you've got, you know, opportunity to catch walleye, catfish on the fly. I caught a cat a couple weeks ago on the fly just by chance. Small mouse, you can get some largies, crappie. You know, if you want to catch bluegill, it's an abundant species list here in the South Platte. So,
and are most of your trout out in Colorado, like you talked about that valley, is it mainly rainbows brown? Do you have all rainbows browns cuts?
Yeah, rainbows browns, a few variations of cutthroat that are native to Colorado. Yeah, that's what you get. And then we've got mountain whitefish. I haven't caught one of those yet, but I got to see one kind of jumping and swimming on the top of the water column. That's pretty cool. So there's a pretty diverse species of fish that you can catch, you know, even in the mountains here.
Really cool, Nick. Well, Nick, really appreciate your time, man. It's been so great learning a ton from you about carp fishing, and maybe that's going to happen for us here in the near future. We're going to take some advice from this episode and maybe go try to chase some of these guys. But also appreciate you too, man, just sharing your story and sharing your passion. I think it's so great, your passion to really focus on getting the next generation, you know, opportunities to see people like themselves on the water. I'm stoked for that.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks, man. I know we've had a kind of a good bit of conversation through Instagram and text messaging, and I told Caleb before the start of night, like, we've had a lot of people on the show, but the people like you, I get more excited about sometimes to talk to, because you're new to some of it, but you've got this passion for what you're doing, and it's so cool to see you reaching you know, youth, especially urban youth. You know, we kind of live in a rural area, we don't get as much opportunity maybe with urban, so it's great that we can connect with people who are doing things like you're doing. Keep rocking it, man. Is there anything else you want to say to those who are listening? We hope, you know, a lot of people definitely check out your Instagram space. Want to mention that, can you mention your Instagram space for us?
It's at Midnight Ceviche. So midnight and ceviche, like the seafood dish.
I like it.
So that's a name a buddy gave me. We were fishing with shrimp late at night up at the toilet bowl in the frying pan. We were fishing at midnight throwing ceviche. Shrimp, and I call him Ghost. He calls me Midnight Ceviche. So that's how we got it. I really appreciate you guys having me on this podcast, right? You know, I'm not the class of angler that I've seen on your podcast, so it was a pretty cool and unique opportunity. So I really appreciate the platform to spread the message, and thanks. Keep doing what you guys are doing and growing. And then if you guys don't mind, I would love to make a plug for some of the nonprofit.
Well, yeah, you mentioned,
yeah, for sure, buddy.
You mentioned you mentioned earlier a tournament you're about to be taking place in.
Yes. If people so, want to help, so Denver Trout Unlimited. Yeah. I'm a member for Denver Trout Unlimited here in Denver, and we focus in conserving the urban waterway of the Denver South Platte. We're hosting our 17th annual Carp Slam tournament. So it's a fly fishing only Carp Slam tournament where we pair 15 professional anglers and guides with 15 amateurs. We call them slamateurs, and they compete to catch the most carp by length throughout the Denver's stretch of the South Platte.
Is this River. In a so, day?
It's in one day. Yeah. Okay. It's going to be on September 16th. So we've actually partnered with a brewery here. They brewed us a Golden Ghost Lager.
Oh, sweet.
In commemoration for the tournament. So it's River North Brewery here in Denver. And yeah, we're raising money, and we take all the money that's donated. Each slamateur angler has to raise a minimum of $350 to be entered into the tournament. And all that money that we raise, we take it and we put it back in the youth education programs like Trout in the Classroom, and, you know, and projects to build environmental flood pools and angling access along the river here in Denver. So you guys can check that out on my Instagram.
Yeah, super cool, man. We'll make sure to we'll put that link to that in the show notes along with your Instagram handle and some other ways. Any other way that
it said people want to reach out? Before you say, it said 17th annual. So this has been going on a while.
17 years, yeah.
So that means we could maybe plan for 18. We would be the amateurs. Hey. Like, we could fly. we could come out with
for the carp slam.
The invite is there.
There you go. That would be pretty sweet, man. Just to fly. There you go. Yeah, I like that idea. What were some of the other?
Got a year to practice.
Yeah, for sure. And you said there was a couple other nonprofit. There was another nonprofit you wanted to mention?
Yeah, and I work with Community Fly Fishing, so it's a pretty cool 501c3 that my buddy just started here in Denver. My buddy Austin Campbell, he's a guide here with Trout's fly fishing shop in Denver, and yeah, he's doing great things, bringing underrepresented minorities into fly fishing through, you know, camps, you know, free days out on the river and fly tying classes. So you can check them out at communityflyfishing.com.
Sweet, man. We'll make sure to tag all those things in the show notes as well. Nick, thank you so much. This has been so much fun, and appreciate all you're doing, and keep it up, man. Keep sharing pics of those what'd you call them again? Desert bonefish.
Rocky Mountain Desert bonefish.
Yeah, man. Keep sharing them.
But away. Those are
They're native to the Rocky Mountain
region. Yeah, there you go. Those and the smile of that little girl. You just keep rocking and loving on her, man, and keep doing what you're doing. And hopefully we'll get on the water sometime, and we know we'll definitely stay in touch. And thanks for being a part of the Dads on the Fly community, man. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, man. Thanks, everyone, for checking out this conversation with Mr. Nick Hall. And until next time, tight lines.
Listening to this episode of the Dads on the Fly podcast. We hope this episode has inspired you as a parent or an angler.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please check us out at dadsonthefly.com. There you can subscribe to our email list and find out all the things we got going on here at Dads on the Fly.